have a quorum present, but we have a rather ambitious agenda, actually, for the next 3 days. So I think we'll get started, and Representative Junkie, if you'll present your bill, and then after we get a quorum, we'll revert back to it and take motions on the bill. So Representative Junkie, House File 2844.
Yep, thank you, Mr. Chair, members. This bill is fairly simple. Over the last year, a working group over at the Department of Labor and Industry, as well as out in the around the state, members from elevators and other places have put together a bill that's a good compromise. It basically addresses how we handle man lifts and church elevators. And the question was early on, we didn't want them to fall into the same category as, say, the elevators in this building on their annual inspections and the fees and everything else. So this bill's been through many committees. There's no opposition. What you're interested in is the fiscal impact, and you do have a fiscal note that actually shows on the plus side for the years coming ahead. So the fees will definitely cover the work that needs to be done, and like I say, there's been no opposition to this in any of the number of committees it's been in.
Okay, are there any questions from the members? Okay, well, you're on the committee, so you'll be available when we begin to make the motions. Representative Leader, House File 3524. And then, Representative Leader, if you can present it, then maybe hang around for a few minutes until we take the motions on the bill. Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, House File 3524 deals with special license plates. The bill's pretty much, the existing language is, the bill does not have much new language, but it clarifies the existing statutes to the extent it tells the commissioner when they can issue a special plate and identifies what a special plate is. Right now, it's not really defined, and it also indicates when special plates can be discontinued. Another part of the bill deals with the Purple Heart plate, which is an issue plate now. One of the problems in the statute, it applies, the Purple Heart plate applies to veterans. Well, what happens now with the conflicts we have a lot of National Guard members who are not considered veterans because they're still in the service. So that would allow these National Guard members, when they come home, if they have a Purple Heart, to be eligible for the plate. And also another part of the bill, it provides that the state is not a collection agency just to collect monies and pass it through. And that's pretty much the plate, the bill, Mr. Chair.
Okay, are there questions of Representative Leader? Representative Junkie.
Representative Leader, I think I had a bill over in your committee on Gold Star plates, expanding that to family members. It wasn't a new plate. Where's that at?
That's pretty well in
that's the... That's another bill coming?
No, there's not any bills coming. Actually, we've had a number of plates. We had for retired firemen. We had for retired police. We've had a number more veterans plate, and it's been the opinion that we issue no new plates unless they comply with the statute. And the only reason this combat or the Purple Heart plate is a clarification, but the Gold Star plate would expand the benefits, as you indicate, to pretty much proliferation that anybody would practically be eligible sitting in this committee, and for that reason, it hasn't moved.
I'll have to, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll have to look at that. I don't think that's what the bill did. But
Mr. Chair and members, some of the plates are wish, in fact, they're people would testify in the audience. It's been a real difficulty for the enforcement agency to read plates. We've got plates that they can't read right now. It's a safety and enforcement issue. We have over 100 and some plates, and I think we've had requests for about 10 or 12 plates again this year, special plates.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Leader, I'm seeing on the fiscal note here that it appears as though there's no cost, but when I read the bill, it just sounds like there's a lot of work for the department to provide information and other things, but they just said that they can just absorb this. Is that what that means?
Mr. Chair and Representative Kiffmeyer, that's correct. I forgot to say that there's a zero fiscal note on the bill.
Okay, any other questions? How close are we? Okay, we're three away from a quorum yet, so Representative Leader will just wait before we take any motions then on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We now have Representative Dabney. I think I saw it. Yeah, there he is.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Deb, you heard that we're operating without a quorum, so we're just presenting the bills, and then we'll revert back. So if you two can remain until we take action on the bill.
Of course.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and particularly because there is an amendment to the bill that I will ask someone to offer at the
It's being passed around at this point. That's the Obermiller bill is...
The Obermiller bill and some other provisions to conform the bill to the Senate language.
Okay.
The underlying bill, if I may, Mr. Chair and members, is the largely the product of the Unemployment Insurance Advisory Council that meets each year. It's a combination of representative from business and labor and various dimensions of that, bipartisan and bicameral in terms of legislative membership. As well, a couple of the highlights is it does make a technical change to some of the statute around the tax rate that employers pay, because currently the UI fund is in deficit, and under current law the tax rate would decline, increasing the deficit to the fund, and this the underlying bill corrects that. It provides a opportunity for employers to save money by prepaying their unemployment taxes. This is actually a win-win. The trust fund gets additional funds while the employer saves money through the prepayment. It simplifies and clarifies some issues around family members in those situations, and creates a new state extension to take place, the place of the emergency state extension that we all passed last year. The amendment that you just received largely works to conform the bill to Senate amendments. I think the most the two particular points in that is the is the initiative by Senator Berglund to I would describe it as limiting abuses in the PCA industry when family members are hired by the state to take care of disabled family members and then apply for unemployment benefits. And the state is on the hook for those unemployment benefits. So there's some language limiting their ability to do that. Senator Fredrickson has a small provision to assist five 3M employees who took a leave of absence to allow other 3M employees to continue employment, but were caught in a law change, and this fixes that. And then the chair referred to Representative Obermuller's bill and some corrected cross-references that are also in the amendment. The bill has no impact on the state's general fund. All the costs, positive and negative, are borne by the UI fund itself.
Okay. Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I'm assuming the motion will be to send this to taxes.
I think that's probably, yes, I think it is. Or ways and means.
Okay.
We don't really also have a quorum, but we'll continue the questions and then we'll be taking motions. We've been operating without a quorum,
right?
So there's been no action on the previous bills.
Correct.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you. Representative Dabney, with the changes on the incurred in the amendment, is there going to be a change in the fiscal note?
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, no. Again, all of the costs, and positive and negative, are incurred within the UI fund, none within the state's general fund.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I realize that there won't be a change to the state government, and the fiscal note shows no state impact, but will there be a change in federal fund expenditures based on the amendment?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to ask Mr. Nelson from Deed to come forward and respond to that. Currently, the federal Congress is debating a number of different approaches to UI trust funds around the country. And I know that Mr. Nelson has had contact with some federal offices and can speak more directly to that question.
Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Lee Nelson. I'm legal counsel to the Unemployment Insurance Program. Representative Biskins, if I could ask you to repeat your question, please.
Representative Biskins.
It's just simply with the changes brought forward by the amendment, the fiscal note was written to House File 3127, but the amendment makes quite a number of changes. Will that change then the fiscal note?
Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Biskins, no, it will not change the fiscal note.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, any other questions? We now have a quorum, so I think we can appropriately get the bill before us, then we'll revert back to the first two that we had a presentation on. So it's Representative Rukavina not here, so the chair moves that the Higher Education and Workforce Development Policy Finance Division report for House File 3127, the first engrossment. Any discussion on the division report? Seeing none, then all those signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. The chair moves that House File 3127, the first engrossment, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. So that motion is before us, and then we have the amendment. And I just wanted to get clarified, Representative Obermueller, your bill is the next one up. And is some of what the amendment was that was passed out, or is that the Obermueller bill in its entirety, or are there some differences?
My bill in its entirety is in this amendment.
Okay, maybe you want to comment if you want to come forward then, because we will, the next motion then would be to adopt the amendment to the Dabney bill, and I assume that Representative Dabney is all right with that, being that he's already talked some about the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and my portion of that amendment is the bill that front loads unemployment benefits. As we talked about in prior committees that some of you sat on, essentially what we're doing is we're saying to people who would be on an existing benefit account but would be, because they're trying hard to earn money, have established a second benefit account, that we're going to let them kind of front load the payments they would get from that second benefit account to 80% of what they were getting until they get through those benefits and then go back onto a federal extension. So it's actually very good, I think, to kind of front load this. No new money goes to them. It's money they would otherwise already be getting. They would just normally get it over 26 weeks, maybe at 50 or 60 bucks a week, and instead now they'll get it at $300 or $400 a week until they can get back onto the federal benefits.
Okay, and just so members follow what we're doing here then, what he was talking about was Senate File 3123, and that language is incorporated in the amendment that we'll be taking up. The chair moves amendment A-10-2474. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. We now have the bill before us as amended. Representative Coles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm glad Representative Blancheski is here in the room. I have a question. I don't recall hearing these types of bills in the Tax Committee, but the first several sections relate to tax issues, and I'm curious, Representative Blancheski, the motion, at least as I understand it, is that this bill is going to go to Ways and Means. Should it be coming to your committee? I'd like to understand why not, if you don't believe it should. Mr. Chair, I don't know if Representative Lincheski would be willing to respond to that.
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Coles, I'm just looking at it, too, and I guess with the motion to Ways and Means, we'll have time to think about it before that and request it if we need to see it. Generally, these have not come to taxes, but I see the base is changing, and I think I just want to ask fiscal staff to work with me privately to understand a little bit about what's going on here, because it is generating, I think, another $50 million. So I'm not sure yet. Normally, these have not come to taxes, but I don't completely understand the bill. So maybe Representative Dabney and staff and I can meet later. Mm-hmm. And I know it's off to Ways and Means, and we could always, I guess, bring it back.
But, and Mr. Chair, Mr. Chair,
Coles.
As I'm reading Section 2, and I'm not sure that I understand the bill as well yet as I should, it appears as though there's a pretty significant change as it relates to how employers are taxed for unemployment insurance. And it would seem to me that that would be something that would be appropriate to come before the tax committee. But, Madam Chair, if you're willing to work with Representative Dabney and with others and with me and Representative Broad and others from the tax committee, if we have to bring this to taxes, I know you've been good about that in the past and making sure that things that should come to the tax committee, in fact, do take a stop there. So
I think Mr. Nelson is probably going to be helpful on this particular question. Mr. Nelson?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the unemployment insurance bill has never gone to taxes, even when there were major tax changes made in 2002. Mr. Chair, Representative Coles, the particular section you reference, really, current law, tax rates are at their maximum. This doesn't change that. What it does in Section 2 is prevent the tax rate from falling, and it would fall if ever the trust fund has an increasing balance. But it could, in fact, have an increasing balance and still be $1 billion in deficit. It is projected to be $1.6 billion in deficit and then fall to $1 billion in 2012. And so you could ultimately cut taxes under current law when you still have $1 billion deficit, thus causing more of a deficit, more borrowing, and actually more interest cost by having to borrow and pay interest cost. So it could actually cost money by not doing Section 2 for employers.
Okay, Representative Coles, did you have any follow-up?
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, I'm not sure that resolves the issue that I want to understand this a little better. Talk to Representative Lencheski further. You know, just because something hasn't been to the tax committee before doesn't mean it necessarily shouldn't go there. And I understand the argument Mr. Nelson is making, but I want to flesh this out a little bit more because it seems to be a change. I understand it's a change that Mr. Nelson believes we should be making, but that's the role of the legislature to make those policy decisions, not the role of the administration. So, I think I understand what he's saying, and I look forward to working with Representative Lencheski to make a determination as to whether this should take a stop in the tax committee.
We'll take the motion then as it is, and Representative Lencheski said she would review the issue. So the chair renews his motion that House File 3127, the first engrossment, be recommended to pass as amended and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. Motion carried. Representative Winkler,
Thank you very much for studying the
minutes.
Chair, I have ever since we left in our break, so I would move the minutes.
Okay, Representative Winkler moves the minutes. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. We'll now revert back to Representative Junkie's bill. For those of you that were not here at the beginning of the meeting, we presented the first two bills, took questions. The chair then moves the Higher Education and Workforce Development Policy and Finance Division Report for House File 3076. Any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Chunky, you want to move the bill?
I'd move the bill.
Okay. Representative Chunky moves House File 2844, the first, or excuse me, Senate File. 2844, the first engrossment, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Champion is a member of the Transportation Division. Would you care to move the division report?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I move the Transportation Finance and Policy Division report for House File 3524, the first committee engrossment.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Champion?
Thanks again, Mr. Chair. I move House File 3524, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and place on the general register.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any additional questions? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, Representative
Mr.
Leader.
Chairman.
We'll now move down to House File 3386, Representative Swales. Representative Swales.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee. There is an amendment, if a member of the committee could move that. It's the A1 amendment.
Okay, I'll move the House File 3386, the second engrossment, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. And do you want to take the amendment before you present the bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that would put it in the order we need.
Okay, the Chair moves the amendment A1. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Swales.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill is the result of many years of hard work on a, I would almost have to say, a multi-generational contribution to homeowner warranty work that has been very a hot topic here in the legislature and at times quite contentious. The bill that I picked up 4 years ago was one that had been carried by Representative Barb Goodwin, and it was it had to do with attorney's fees for warranty work. Last year we had a package of six bills, and five of those bills, all six did pass both bodies, but five of those bills were vetoed. So as a result of those vetoes, a work group was created at the Department of Labor and Industry under the leadership of Mr. Charlie Durenberger, who is sitting here next to me. And out of the work of many months of this work group, a great deal of compromise and negotiating took place. And about a month ago, when homeowners still had quite a few issues with this bill, and it looked like it might actually not survive the committee process, I pulled together all the players, and we had members of the home builders or the Builders Association and their attorneys there. We had homeowners' attorneys there, and we had Mr. Durenberger and another member of the Home Warranty Task Force. And we met for 3 hours, and we went through the bill section by section and line by line, and we hammered out the differences and came to consensus on language. And I am very pleased to say that there is now agreement by all parties that this bill, it's not a perfect product, but it does go a long way in limiting the number of cases that will have to go through litigation. It creates a panel of neutrals that homeowners and the builders can use in order to reach agreement. And so if you wouldn't mind, Mr. Chair, I'd like Mr. Durenberger maybe to just comment on the process of the work group and the intentions to move
forward. And that would be fine. Just for the information of the committee, if you notice, we didn't have a motion dealing with a division report, although the division did have an informational hearing. Technically, the bill wasn't in their possession at that point in time, so feel free to comment. Mr. Durenberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Charlie Durenberger at the Department of Labor and Industry. I was asked last fall to put together a group of people involved on all sides of the issues relating to homeowners and their disputes with builders. We had people who were builders, we had homeowners, we had representatives of the insurance industry, and we met on a roughly monthly basis beginning in August. And then we accelerated the process in January and February, trying to get consensus on as many items as we could so that we could get something that could be presented in the form of a bill here in this session. As Representative Swales said, some of these meetings were fairly contentious, and we had a difficult time coming to consensus on several issues. The main one that was of concern to the homeowners was the issue of attorney's fees, and the homeowners all felt very strongly that that they believed the solution to this issue was to have allow them to be able to be awarded attorney's fees. We couldn't arrive at a consensus on that. We discussed a possible alternative or a compromise on that issue. We weren't able to achieve consensus on that, but we will continue to meet. The warranty task force will continue to meet through the summer to try to achieve a consensus on that issue. But what Representative Swales' bill represents right now is the consensus that we were able to achieve on several different issues.
Okay. Are there any questions? Representative Smith.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. You referenced, you offered a compromise in response to the homeowner's request for attorney fees. What kind of a compromise would that be?
Mr. Durenberger.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, it wasn't, I didn't personally offer the compromise, I'll make that clear, but we did discuss a compromise that was based on the current process for land condemnation, where apparently in that process there's a method by which attorney's fees can be awarded to either party depending on where the final decision of the judge came down relative to the final offer that was made. In this case, it would be by the builder. So what we were saying is the proposal would have been if the builder made an offer to repair and the homeowner refused it and the matter went to litigation and ultimately a judge or jury awarded the homeowner, you know, far less than what they had sought, then perhaps the builder may be able to recover attorney's fees. So the long and short of it was it would allow attorney's fees to be awarded either way depending on the findings of the court. So it kind of tried to provide balance to both sides because the builders were concerned that if only the homeowners were allowed to recover fees, that would generate all sorts of litigation that maybe wasn't entirely warranted, and that if there was at least some balance where the builder could be able to recover fees if in fact a judge had decided that the case probably shouldn't have gotten that far, that was essentially the compromise.
Representative Smith.
Well, Mr. Chairman, of the witness, is the awarding in either way of attorney's fees right now prohibited or barred by some statute? I'm not aware of any.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, I don't know that there's any specific statute that bars it. There are ways that either party can have attorney's fees awarded under certain circumstances, but from the discussions that we've had in our meetings, some of the attorneys have told us that those are fairly limited situations in which attorney's fees can currently be awarded.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just curious about the neutrals fees that they actually charge out the various parties. I'm not seeing anywhere. It says in the legislation that there's fees that the neutral shall submit to the department, and then there's an administrative fee that they can charge. But if the neutrals are randomly selected, do they all charge the parties the same fee? Do they charge different fees? Is there a cap on how much they can charge? If three are chosen and you select one of the three, is there a limit? How does that work?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Broad, we never really discussed specifically how that would operate. There's nothing in the bill that would dictate that every neutral charges the same fee. My anticipation, and part of what we had talked about in the task force was that if this moved forward and became law, that the task force itself would continue to meet to talk about, you know, how should the commissioner actually administer this program. And my suggestion was going to be that at a minimum, the neutrals all have to disclose what their fees are, and the anticipation is that those fees would be on an hourly basis, because one of the items that we arrived at consensus on was a limit on the number of hours that the neutral could charge to try to, you know, speed the process up. So at a minimum, we would require that the neutrals disclose the rate that they would charge.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, and I appreciate the that description. I guess I'm a little concerned that if there's a pool of individuals who charge varying rates, and there's a random selection of three of those individuals. I could, as a party, have the opportunity to only choose from one of the three at the top end or one of the three at the bottom end of the scale. And so I'm just trying to get a sense of how wide of a swath we're looking at in terms of the fees charged. Maybe it's something that you can work on, but it just seems to me that forcing people into a system and not having any ability to control either giving them a menu of options related to what type of fees that they're willing to pay, or boxing them into the unknown of the fees is a concern, I guess, of mine. If you're going to put those folks out as the group of people that we want to help you and then essentially force people into it, I think that maybe just need to work on that a little bit more, or maybe I need to understand a little bit better.
Mr. Chair, just to respond to Representative Broad, homeowners are not being forced into the system. This is an opportunity for them to be able to get some remediation without having to go to the court.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And Representative Swales, what I was referring to was they're given three options the way I read the bill. They're given three options of individuals that they get to choose from. And that's the group that I was considering in terms of they're being forced to use that group if they want to participate in the process. And my concern is just related to the fees and the how wide of a range we're looking at for those folks.
Mr. Chair, Representative Obermuller had a strong contribution to this bill, so perhaps he can describe.
Welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize. I was going to try to avoid coming up, but Representative Broad, to that question, we did also provide an off-ramp for folks who didn't like any of the three options. You actually have the ability to set your own alternative dispute resolution procedures. So if you want to pick your cousin Tim to come and do the neutral evaluation at no cost to you, and you can get the builder to agree to it, or you're the builder, you can get the homeowner to agree to it, that's totally acceptable too, so it should. And the other piece is, as practice has gone with mediations and with the alternative dispute resolution now, the prices ultimately moderate out because these people who want to do this neutral work don't want to be out of line with competitiveness to the other folks. And so mediators charge roughly the same now across the board in an hourly rate, and I really expect that will actually be what happens here, because it'll be a number that everybody has access to, and no one's going to want to be the guy who's out there at $1,000 an hour when everybody else is at $300 an hour because they won't get any of the work. Thank you, Mr.
Representative
Chair.
Representative Broad, is that?
That's right.
Okay. Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first of all, Representative Swales, congratulations, because I know, having been a part of this group since 2006, that you've worked very hard. Congratulations to Representative Obermuller. And thank you to Mr. Dernberger and the builders. This is a good bill. I'm going to vote for it. I think it's a step in the right direction. But I think we all have to realize, as I think you privately do too, that this is a ceiling, not a floor. This is a step in the right direction. I think we have a long way to go. These bills that were vetoed last year, I think that was unfortunate. There are still pitfalls for the unwary, and everyday people, homeowners, are still caught in very much of a trap on the front end and the back end of this process. On the front end, there are all sorts of traps, like the written requirement, so you can actually call someone up, speak by phone with someone, and that doesn't count because it has to be in writing, and consumers might not know that. On the back end, there's the issue, I think we all acknowledge, of attorney's fees. You have homeowners, real people. We had people in here from Wilmer, from Rochester, from the Duluth area, from the Twin Cities that we heard from last year in particular, who spend $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 or more to win in court to fix a problem that costs about that much. So they've won, but they're out all that money in attorney's fees. So it's kind of a hollow victory. And these are everyday people. They're our constituents. They're Democrats. They're Republicans. They're independents. And every day they face these risks. So I really appreciate this effort. It's a great step forward. But I think we should all understand that there's more to do in future years, in my opinion. Thanks.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, then the chair renews motion that House File 3386, the second engrossment, be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom is next, and this was a bill that went to Representative Kahn's committee. Representative Kahn, do you care to make the motion for the division report?
Yes. I move that the division report for
3310
be accepted.
Okay, Representative Kahn moves the division report for House File 3310, the first committee engrossment. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Kahn?
Now, I'll move that the bill be recommended to pass.
And re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Okay, the motion is before us, and there is an amendment. Did you want to take the amendment first to get it in the form that you would like?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. That would be Amendment A1. Representative Kahn moves the amendment. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Back as far back as 1998, the state has had a vehicle crimes task force, and what their job was is to look into folks that were, not paying the appropriate license plate tabs, not the appropriate tax on vehicles, registering their vehicles in other states. And then during the time of Jesse Ventura, we reduced license plate tabs to $99, and so Minnesota was virtually similar to the other states. And so that task force was reduced down to one person. This takes that task force and really brings it back, and it actually is a tax compliance piece and generates money. And so, Mr. Chair, I do have support from the Alliance of Transportation, the Minnesota Automobile Dealers Association, and I have Matt Hodapp with me from the Minnesota Troopers Association.
Okay, any discussion on the bill? Representative Coles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hillstrom, just walk me through the numbers here. We're increasing the appropriation by what, and expecting to increase revenues to the state by what?
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Coles. In the first year, we are increasing revenues, I believe, by I think it's 191 out of one fund, 50,000 out of another. We do anticipate an overall net cost savings to the state, 566. So a little over $500,000. That's while we're ramping up. And in the second and third year, 12 and 13, the appropriation is for a full complement of 8, and we're very conservative in the numbers that we anticipate that we're going to bring in at $64,000. However, the last time this went into place, there was voluntary compliance in addition. And so these are very conservative numbers, but we do expect to generate additional money.
And Representative Coles, I understand that the we just received the fiscal note, and it's being copied right now by the pages. But it would reflect what Representative Hillstrom's testimony just was. Is that correct?
That is correct, Mr. Yeah. Chair.
Okay. Any further discussion? Well, seeing none, then all those in favor of passage of House File 3310, the First Committee Engrossment, as amended, and be referred to the Ways and Means. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carried.
Thank you, members.
Yes, thank you both.
Would you like me to stay for my next bill?
You're next up.
Okay.
That would probably be a good idea then. Representative Paymar, if you'd care to make a motion.
Mr. Chair, I would move that House File 2470, the first engrossment, be recommended to pass and placed on the general register.
That motion is before us. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill makes the possession of an identity scanner and re-encoder a crime. Currently, with the issue of identity theft, people take your credit card numbers by skimming the information off of it or off your driver's license. But just possessing that information isn't what makes it a crime. And so there is no fiscal cost to this bill, and that's what this committee cares about. And it started off an initiative of the Attorney General's Office and the Department of Public Safety, asked us to add driver's license, and so now it's a joint cooperative agreement, Mr. Chair.
Any discussion? Well, seeing none, then Representative Paymar renews his motion. that House File 2470, the first engrossment, be recommended to pass and placed in the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you, Member.
House File 3024. I've been making all those division motions. I think Representative Solberg, would you?
I will move House File, the committee report.
The division report.
Division report on House File 3024, is that correct?
That's correct. The motion is before us to adopt the division report. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Solberg, if you'd move the bill.
3024, the first engrossment, be recommended to pass and place in the general register.
Okay, the motion is before us, and I understand that there's going to be an amendment, Representative Murdoch.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
And
is that the A3 amendment?
Yes, and that would put the bill in the order that you'd like to present it. It looks like it's technical. Is that?
It's just a technical change. It'll get in the same shape as where it's at in the omnibus bill.
Okay, Representative Solberg.
I would move the H3024A3 amendment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. If you'd care to present the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill, this bill deals with some building code changes that the Department of Labor and Industry supports. It deals with single-wide manufactured homes, and it protects the equity of the owners of those homes. We started working last summer on this bill when it was brought to my attention by two manufactured home dealers in my district, and worked with Senator Saxhog and Senator Scogin on the Senate side, and Representative Solberg signed on right away, so I thank him for that. We worked with Assistant Commissioner Tom Joachim from the department. We worked with Mark Bruner from the Minnesota Manufactured Homes Association, and so it has the support of the department. The bill went through all three committees unanimously, so it's a good bipartisan bill, and it also keeps jobs here in Minnesota by passing this bill. So I guess I just open up any questions.
Okay, there are other questions. Well, seeing none, then Representative Solberg renews his motion that House File 3024, the first engrossment, be recommended to pass as amended and placed on the general register. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you.
Looks like you're keeping your record of unanimous votes then.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll go to House File 2887.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Drazkowski is in number 10 SOB. He'll be a few minutes late, so if you'd hold him on the docket.
Okay. Yeah, we'll just pass over it temporarily then. Okay. Our next author isn't here either, so we'll just be in temporary recess until one or the other arrives. He's in room 10?
Yes, sir.
Maybe one of the pages could go down and get Representative Drazkowski. He's in room 10.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if there's
Representative Smith.
If there will absolutely be no questions, I'll be happy to stand in his place.
Just goes to tax.
Is Representative Greiling here? Yeah, it was in your division. Why don't you make the motion for the division report. We can get that taken care of then.
Mr. Chair, I move the K-12 Education Finance Division report for House File 2887, the first committee engrossment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none?
To the bill?
I haven't.
No, this is just to adopt the division report. Any discussion on the division report? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House File 2887, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Taxes.
Okay, that motion is before us. Representative Smith, you indicated that you would stand in for him. We can either that or wait.
I'll be happy to.
Before we go to questions.
Mr. Chairman, I'll be happy to sit and wait.
Okay. This deals, members, with fire. I think it was a meat processing plant in St. Charles, Minnesota. Maybe one of you knows more about it. Representative Hausman.
Well, Mr. Chair, my question, and maybe only the author can ask this, since that was already in last year's bill where, I mean, there was real money for this city, but this bill looks like there's real money, but that we had already responded to a disaster in that bill last year that included flooding and fire and tornado, I think. And I guess I don't understand why this community would be coming back a second time for funding for the same disaster.
Mr. Marks can respond, or Representative Greiling. Why don't we have Mr. Marks, and then you can follow up, Representative Greiling. Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair and Representative House members, this bill, and if you look at Section 2 first, the repealer actually repeals the section that was in last year's bill that set up aid to the school district. The aid to the school district was designed as additional general education aid, and it was for counting students who were no longer there. The issue has come up now that the school district's probably not going to lose too many students. At this point, we don't know for sure how many. What this bill does is to, rather than have basically a forecasted appropriation and however much is lost, it's taking the dollar amounts from the February forecast, so the amounts that are currently expected to be spent in the February forecast for the declining pupil aid, and it's making it a direct appropriation, a set dollar amount, and then it still has the money going to the school district, but then saying what the school district would not earn by losing pupils under the formula is available for the city, and that would be paid by the Department of Revenue then to the city. So it's essentially taking what had been a forecasted appropriation, making it a set appropriation, and then saying the city gets what the school district wouldn't get by losing students.
And Mr. Chair, why are we being generous to this city in a year when we're cutting all the cities?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
I wonder, maybe being that it was heard in division, maybe that would be a good beginning point, and then I'll defer to you. But
thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I wish Representative Drazkowski were here because I don't like to.
Well, you found out, unfortunately, not only was he in room 10, but he was presenting a bill. So what we can do now, Representative Huntley is here. Let's take a couple of quick questions, and then I'll just lay the bill over until the author comes up if there are additional questions.
Very good. But members know me well enough to know I would say this whether he were here or not, so I'll say it again when he's here in case anyone thinks I would only say it when he's not here. This is a bill that Education Finance passed without recommendation. I believe we would have killed it quite handily, except for Representative Marquardt being the nice person that he is, said that he would hear it in the property tax division, and so then we passed it without recommendation. But it was it's not a bill that I would recommend that go any further than being heard in the tax division, if it's even heard, because this was an estimate for, I believe it was 75 students that they would lose. According to testimony in the committee, they had lost four. And so then, you know, the way that goes, declining in pupil enrollment is four declining pupils. And since there were not any more than four, and they got the money for that, the rest of this, in a time like this, or even any time, in my opinion, should fall to the bottom line and be there for the deficit that we have. But they, you know, are making the old college try to have it go to the cities. And then they had testimony there with their city manager to say why the cities needed it connected to economic development after the flood. That was not an education issue, so we did not hear most of the gentleman's testimony, despite him having driven up from his community. And that was, I think, part of the niceness of Representative Marquardt in wanting to honor the testimony and hear the bill, which we did not hear in education. But there's, to me, there's no way in the world that we should be actually passing this bill, other than to this is a pass-through committee, but I think taxes would certainly be advised, you know, not to pass it.
Okay, Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Speaking for on Representative Druskowski's behalf, because we did talk about this yesterday, the argument that that the community of St. Charles will make is that it is a small community. This was the largest employer in the community. The employer has chosen not to rebuild. There's a tremendous tax base loss in this small community. The state has already appropriated these funds to the community, albeit the school district, but to help with the vitality of the community. And with that, the tax base loss is a tremendous burden on St. Charles, the city itself. And so they're requesting, as Representative Greiling said, making the good college try, all right, say, well, we've already put this money out to the community to help it. Let's shift it from X to Y. It's not needed at X, but it's very needed in Y.
Yes,
that's the point he'll make.
I think what we'll do, being that there's some controversy with the bill, I'd hate to vote on it in the absence of the author. So we'll lay the bill over and take up Representative Huntley's bill. We've mean that he's here now. So Representative Huntley moves the Health Care and Human Services Finance Division report for House File 3279, the first committee engrossment. The motion is before us. Any discussion on the division report? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Huntley, care to make a motion?
Mr. Chair, I would move House File 3279, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, the motion is before us on the bill, Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and members, this is a bill that relates to federal requirements that have been placed on all the states, and it relates to how electronic medical records get transferred from one place to another. And if we do what the feds want, the healthcare providers in Minnesota will get between $450 and $800 million in the next 4 years extra over what they would get if we do nothing. And so what this bill does is match us up with the federal requirements, so that if I'm down here in St. Paul and I go to have massive chest pains and they take me to Regents Hospital, Regents Hospital will be able to get my records out of SMDC and figure out what's wrong with me. But in order to do that, we have to have a system where all these different groups and computers can talk to each other. And that's what this bill is about. It maintains all the privacy things that Minnesota has in terms of medical records. We're changing none of the privacy requirements in this bill. And, in fact, Minnesota has much stricter privacy requirements than most other states. So there's nothing in this bill that does that. It just sets up a system where different clinics can talk or to a hospital, or a hospital can talk to another hospital in various parts of the state. Initially, there was some controversy in this bill, but between two different groups that were working on setting up these kinds of systems, and that controversy has been resolved.
Okay,
we have Dr. Golden here to really go into the details.
Okay, are there any questions on the bill? Representative Kahn.
I actually have an amendment to the bill, which I need to give to the author. And
okay, you can have one of the pages distribute actually, the amendment.
It's actually, members of the committee, if you recall, I have I objected to the to the Julie Bunn bill because of the interconnection with the state computer system, and the and it was not clear that the Office of Enterprise Technology would be full. Did you give the Office of Enterprise? Okay.
Someone else. Yeah, he's getting it right now.
Okay. And so this just makes sure that any state agency information systems which are necessary to be used for this system or any interconnection that they'll have with state agency systems will be subject to the authority of the Office of Enterprise Technology. And it's also one of the critical things of doing this, I think, particularly for health systems, is the requirement, is the accessibility requirements. So I'm sorry, I apologize, I should have seen this in GovOp, but I didn't. So.
Okay,
I'd like to move the amendment.
Representative Kahn moves the motion, or makes the moves the amendment, the A4 amendment. Representative Huntley, have you had a chance to look at the amendment? Have any advice to the committee?
The department has been working with the Office of Enterprise Technology, and they would be willing to accept this amendment.
Okay. Motion is before us, then. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Any further discussion on the bill? If not, then Representative Huntley renews his motion of the House File 3279, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Okay, we had temporarily laid over Representative Joskowski's bill, House File 2887, and I see he's here now. We've had some discussion of the bill already. Representative Smith stood in for you, at least got things going. So if you want to just quickly recap why you're making the proposal for the change from the school district to the city.
Will do, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Just quickly, if St. Charles is a community that went through the floods of 2007 and then late in session last year on April 17th, North Star Foods, the largest employer in town, about 240 employees, burned to the ground. And so what this is, last year we did also, there were two initiatives that came through the legislature that we were trying to do to get some aid for St. Charles. One was to protect their schools against declining pupil situations because of the fire. The other was an attempt to get some assistance for the city of St. Charles to buffer against the declining revenues that the city was going to expect. At that point, the estimate was somewhere around $400,000 a year from North Star Foods being gone in the form of property taxes and municipal utilities. That bill that was intended to help St. Charles did not progress through the legislature, at least the one for the city. The one for the school district did, and it passed. It was adopted into law. And what this bill does basically is asks if we can take any unspent amount of that declining pupil aid that is already included in the budget forecast and any part that is not used by the school and transfer that over and use it for aid for the city to help again buffer against those losses, which they estimate now to be, Mr. Chair, about $300,000 per year due to North Star Foods being gone. I would defer any kind of technical parts of the of how the bill is written, and actually thanks to Mr. Marks and Ms. Schill and Mr. Crow for helping craft this language, which does so, as I understand, even though it looks complicated, does so very cleanly, and is a budget neutral bill.
Okay, being that we had laid the bill over technically, we should have a motion to put it back before us again. Do you want to renew your motion, Representative Greiling?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would renew my motion.
Okay. Representative Greiling then moves that House File 2887, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. And any further discussion then on that motion, Representative Houseman? Representative Solberg?
Mr. Chair, in the forecast, always, we have a line item in the forecast that talks about cancellations. And we count something like $25 million, I think, each biennium in cancellations, if I recall right. $20 million. Okay, well, I was off by $5 million. Close enough for government work, I guess. But this would be one of the items that would be counted in that cancellation. Even though it's drafted in such a way that it doesn't show any fiscal impact this year, because you're taking money from the forecast that was supposed to go someplace, it still would normally drop down to the bottom line in the next biennium, or become part of that cancellation in this biennium. So I understand it's not a great deal of money, but I think that we're setting a very difficult precedence here of taking thing that we respond to with tragedies within cities and school districts, and had a specific program for that we've had in the past for declining enrollment for this type of thing, and then transferring it to another appropriation. And I guess I have just a great deal of difficulty with that.
Representative Houseman.
And, Mr. Chair, I think it points up again, I'm glad that Representative Pawlowski stepped back in the room, because I think Representative Pawlowski tried to resolve this with a bill one year. We are generally a very generous state when it comes to crisis and tragedy. And last year, you may recall, in the bonding bill, we responded to the flood, specifically in the Red River Valley. We don't. In that one, we even take a lot of burden off in terms of local effort. And we responded last year to fire and tornado in one bill. But at a certain point, it seems to me that to be fair to all taxpayers in the state, we've got to figure out what's the threshold here and what's the amount of local effort that ought to be assumed. Yes, we'll be partners. But there would always, I think, be an assumption that there ought to be equitable local effort also as people respond to flood and fire and tornado. My observation would be, and I can't remember, Representative Pawlowski, if your bill is law and whether it's maybe not sufficiently funded, but to take it out of the realm of responding to individual crisis like this, and have some sort of statewide policy that assures that we're fair statewide to all taxpayers.
Okay, any further discussion? Well, seeing none then, all those in favor of the motion to recommend it to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes, signify by saying.
Mr. Chairman. Could I amend the motion?
As long as we haven't voted on it, you certainly can.
Without recommendation.
Okay, that's the way it came out of the K-12 division, if I recall. So
I would move that be without recommendation.
So the motion then would be recommended to pass without recommendation to the Committee on Taxes. Any further discussion? Seeing none then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. With that, members, we're going to be meeting tomorrow morning.
He was late here because he was...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're very welcome. That will be the basement hearing room. We're meeting actually tomorrow and Friday in the basement hearing room. Remember, that's a little bit tight in terms of seating, so be sure you arrive early if you want to get a good chair. And what time is it? 9:30 a.m. tomorrow, and is it 8:30 on Friday? And 8:30 on Friday, so be sure your calendars reflect that. With that, meeting adjourned.